Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to White Wine Question Time, Something from the Cellar, where today I'm giving you a chance to spend an hour with Louis Walsh away from the Celebrity Big Brother house. How good is Louis Walsh in Big Brother, by the way? I mean, I can't stop watching. He is like a human teapot that cannot stop spilling the tea, the stories, the name dropping. But what I have noticed with Louis is he's great at talking to other people about themselves. He's great at dropping stories about other people. He's not brilliant at giving over too much about himself. Well, I'm about to put that right for you, because I sat down with him, having worked with him, I mean, a lot over the years, all the way from my days as the editor of Smash Hits magazine, where he used to pester me about Boyzone and Westlife, all the way through, of course, to our time together on The X Factor. So this is your chance to get to know Louis, the man, the music, the madness. Enjoy. Louis, how are you? It's been too long.
Kate, you look fantastic. Whatever you've done, it's working.
You just look fantastic. Two ring lights. So do you.
Well, the lighting is working. I'm in Dublin. I haven't even shaved for you, but it's fine.
Listen, it's been more than a minute since we last spoke. And then I called you the other day. And where were you? Exactly where you always were every time I called you, on a shoot somewhere with a new band that you're about to get out the traps. You don't stop.
Well, I mean, yeah, I had auditions in Dublin, and I auditioned almost 1,000 people, and I ended up with 5 amazing young boys, and they all sing, and they're really, really brilliant. I don't even have a name for them.
Do you not?
No, I've no name. And they've been in a studio with Brian Higgins, you know, who did all Sugar Babes and Girls Aloud. He's really excited. We think we've got 5 or 6 hits already.
Now, where did this come from? I mean, listen, you're at a stage in life where I think one of the last times we spoke, you said, I want to slow down a bit. I want to take it a bit easier.
Yeah.
You just can't help yourself, can you?
But Kate, we had 2 years of doing nothing. I was sitting here in Dublin and I was going crazy. I was watching Netflix and Amazon and Apple and playing music. And I needed to do something. So that's when I decided I'll have auditions and find something new. Because I'm working with Westlife still. That's great. And they're selling out everywhere. And they have a massive year this year. But I wanted to do something new.
You are still selling stadiums with Westlife. I cannot believe it. You know,
Wembley. Asia is huge for Westlife. China, Asia, Japan. They are massive over there. That's the really big market, you know.
I remember going over to Asia with you and Boyzone back in the day, where Duffy stole... borrowed a car that we ended up having
that
to do a bit of a mini gig to a couple of police officers there to stop us getting arrested.
Kate, you know what? You were always so great when you were editor of Smash Hits. You were so good for all the young bands. You helped me so much. And you were always giving me advice about songs and people, and you were spot on. And I'll always remember Smash Hits. That was the start of it all for me, you know?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And that's where we first met. And you were a tour de force. You were I couldn't get you off the phone. And you would never take no for an answer. And I found myself never being able to say no to you because you're just too charming.
Well, I was enthusiastic about what I did because I love pop music. I still like it, you know. And you had an opinion on everything, which was brilliant. And you knew what was going on. And, you know, you were the editor of the big pop magazine. It was brilliant. And then the big poll party. And all that. I had to be nice to you. But then we worked on X Factor and we had even more fun. But that was in our dressing room.
Well, our dressing rooms as well. Okay. Mine. So all four of us were next door to each other. In fact, I was next to Simon. And then on the other side to me was Sharon. And then you were at the end. And it was a little hotbed of action, wasn't it? That dressing room corridor.
If people knew what went on, that was the real show. That was it was fantastic. It was brilliant. And it was all real because everybody thought we were in on who's getting voted or what category. We didn't know anything. And that's what made the show so amazing. And then at the end of the night, who's in the bottom two, who's going to be voted home. I mean, we took it so serious and it was great. We had a brilliant time.
We did have a good time, didn't we?
We had it. Sharon, you and me, we bonded. Simon kept to himself. You know, he was the big star. It was his show. And but it was an amazing time.
We did laugh a lot. An awful lot.
Maybe, and that's good. Laughing is good.
There was a spell at the end of the 90s into the early noughties where I would fly out most New Year's Eves in Dublin and always bring a couple of friends with me and we'd have a bit of a party. I don't know if you have many memories of those evenings. You were the only one not drinking, as I recall.
I remember you in the Westbury Hotel, and Denise Van Outen, dancing to an Old Saints song. Yeah. And you kept playing it and playing, and we had the best fun. And we used to go to the great nightclub, the Pod. And Dublin, it's still a great place. It's a great little island. I love living here, and it's easy.
Now, travelling around Ireland with you is a bit like walking around the streets of Rome with the Pope. And I'm not even joking.
Well, I know everybody here. You know. You too. I know a lot of people and I like it's easier. Living here is so easy, you know, and it's less stress. I mean, I had a brilliant time going over and back to the UK when I was doing X Factor. That was like 15 years.
I know. You're always in a hotel and always on a plane.
Always in a hotel, but always having a laugh. And it was a brilliant time. I wouldn't swap anything. I've had a great life so far, but I just don't want it to end yet.
It's not going to end yet. Look at you.
No, I still want the fun. I still want hits. I keep saying to me, I want some more hits.
So that appetite has not left you, has it? And how are the Westlife boys? Because when I looked into the research for this interview, I can't believe you've done over 50 million record sales with those guys.
Yep, absolutely.
50 million.
Yeah, easy. And a lot of number ones. Well, Simon Cowell signed them. He was brilliant to work with. You know, and he used to pick all the songs. We had a brilliant time with him, but their touring is huge, Kate. Asia, they're probably the biggest pop act there at the moment, apart from Justin Bieber or some of the Korean acts, the BTS and stuff. They're massive over there, you know. And they did a TV show here the other day in Dublin. It was for Chinese TV, but 23 million people watch it, you know.
What?
I know. And that's not even a big audience in China.
You know? I love the fact that, look at you, you're sat here at an age where you could more than be entitled to say, I'm retired now, my feet are up. And here you are quoting viewing figures for Chinese TV shows because you still care.
I know all the viewing figures. I watched Britain's Got Talent the other night. I watched the Jubilee concert. I watched all of it. I love the whole Jubilee weekend. I love it. She's an amazing woman. We're
Isn't
never
going
to have another woman like her. Ever.
Yeah. And you thought you'd work with some big queens.
And I have. But she's the best. And she's the most regal. Simon is not Simon. Honestly, it's not.
Hey, how's he doing? Please tell me that he's parked his bike for once and for all and is staying on two feet and not two wheels.
Well, I don't really know. But I watched him on TV. I thought he was very good the weekend on Britain's Got Talent. He seemed to have his mojo back, you know. He's a tour de force. Listen, he's a force of nature. There's nobody like him. You know,
I can't believe he's getting married
to a woman. I know. Well, he has a son, Eric. But Lauren has been really good for him, and she's kind of kept him on the straight and narrow. You know,
I've never met Lauren, but she's got to be some kind of woman to get him down on one knee.
She definitely is. And she's looking after him, you know. And he's kind of mellowed a bit. I think having baby helped him an awful lot, you know.
Wow. And
he still wears odd clothes. He still wears the high heels. He still has the funny haircut, you know. And you know what he's like more than anybody.
I know.
You know? But listen,
the irony of him telling us what to wear was never lost on me. Trust me. Like, really? You've got a flat top and a centre parting, and you're giving me fashion advice?
Yes, darling, and no, darling, and you're three bags full, darling. Yeah. Oh, Sharon is so funny about him, you know. When you were working with two queen bees, it was so different, you know, because they were so, both of them were so different, you know, and
so different.
Entitled, and they all had opinions, you know.
Yeah,
and then you had an opinion, and you used to tell them, which was great. Yeah. You were one of the few people to tell them.
Yeah, I was, and look where it got me.
Hey, listen, you're still working. You're looking younger.
Oh, bless you, darling. Happy? I'm very happy. And I wouldn't have changed a word of it.
No, or a moment
of it. I really wouldn't, Libby. We did have an extraordinary time on a show that...
We did.
Well, you know, people will talk about forever and a day if you were born between the noughties and now, because it was a really important part of pop culture.
It was. It really was. And, you know, the shows are never going to be as good as that again. It was real. It was funny. It was everything. Everything is too woke and too perfect. Everyone's afraid to have an opinion.
Yeah. Well, do you think it would be difficult to do that role now in a time when you've really got to think about everything you say, and yet you're being paid to react in the moment?
I couldn't do it because I don't have a great filter, you know. I like to say it as I see it, because Kate, you know that. Well, you know the people at home are thinking the very same thing as you.
Do you think that when we look back over old shows, and not just X Factor, but all of those talent shows, I mean, I've just made a 20th anniversary series for Radio 2 about Pop Idol, and some of the judging comments and the things that were said just have not aged well. You wouldn't say it now.
Yeah, but it's boring now. You have to be, everyone is wonderful and you're going to be a star and all that. I mean, they're not going to be a star, you know. There's very few stars out there. And it's like, I think people have to be honest. That's the one thing about Simon. He was honest. And people mightn't have liked that, but it's very hard to make it in this business, even if you're good, you know. Listen, I don't know. I like to say it like it is. People
are always have.
People either have it or they haven't got it, Kate. You know, and you have people coming in singing, and they're nice, and then you forget about them 2 minutes later. That's no good.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. And listen, you've sold almost, it's over 75 million records as a manager. So you have more than earned the right to have an opinion on that stuff. So listen, I've got three questions for you. It sounds simple, but I hope it's not. And I wanted to kick off with the first one. It's about you and your prolific use of the phone. You, unlike anyone else I know, are wedded to your phone. Whenever I think of you, it's in your hand or it's nearby. Exactly. Yeah. And every single one of the acts that you've managed over the years, all of them, and anyone that's worked closely with you, as have I, we all do impressions of how you say goodbye on the phone.
Okay. Because I'm trying to get rid of them off the phone. Goodbye, 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 goodbye. Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye. It's like, yeah, fuck off and leave me alone. Like, go. I'm from somebody else. I have a bigger name on the other line, you know?
And you do. You go, okay, bye-bye, 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 bye-bye,
bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Yeah, it's an Irish thing, I suppose.
I can't
change now, Kate. It's too late.
No. And you are, as am I, a fan of the phone call, right? If I phone you, you pick up. It doesn't matter what you're doing. I can always get through to you. So I wanted to talk about some of the most significant phone calls you've been a party to. See, either ones you've made or ones you've received. I want to start at the beginning with a phone call that changed that changed your career, that started your career. What's the one call that kicked off everything for you as a manager?
I've had so many. I don't know. I mean, I suppose when I had Boyzone, I was told they had like a number one record. That was important to me at the time, because a number one and doing Top of the Pops and doing that was all I ever wanted. So I suppose...
But you'd already been started by then. So I'm thinking more like when you were out booking acts, earning your stripes as a manager,
as an agent
on the road.
But I didn't have a phone.
Did you not? Did you used to go to phone boxes?
I used to use the phone box in the town where I live in Calchi Mar and putting in the coins trying to get the gigs.
That's what I'm talking about.
I earned it, yeah. I used to do all that. We didn't have a phone at home.
I remember you saying to me, I mean, like, money was tight at home. You're one of nine children. You know, it was a busy house. So not only did you not have a phone, if you did, you wouldn't have been able to hear anything anyway. So you would gather as much pocket change as possible and go and literally, you know, hold the line up in the local phone box. And
make as many. Box.
Yeah. And that's how you started your career, in a phone box.
That is absolutely true. And that's the best way to start. Kate, I started at the bottom. That's what people don't realise today. You have to start at the bottom and claw your way there. And anybody I know that's kind of made it and has a long career, that's what happens. You earn it. You work it. You know, you look at Robbie Williams and Gary Barlow and all these people. They've earned it.
Yeah.
Simon Cowell, they've all earned it. Look, Sharon Osbourne, you learn, you live, and you, that's how you become good at what you do.
You've definitely always had a passion and a drive for what you do. Tell me about who you would have been calling from that phone box.
I would have been calling Dublin. I'd be calling like the big show band office in Dublin, trying to get the support slots for the local band that I was. Because if I got the support for the local band, I got into the gig free.
Yeah.
We had a night out and we got paid. Sometimes we got laid and paid. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So who were the bands that you would have been repping at that time? Just local artists?
There was a band called Time Machine. They were just a support act to all the kind of show bands in Ireland, which were really great show bands. Bands like The Freshmen and Chips and Platinum. You wouldn't know them, but they were brilliant bands and they did put on a great show. But then I came to Dublin because I was no good at school. So I went to Dublin and I worked in a show band office. And that's how I learned my craft, really.
How did you get that job?
Through one of the guys in a show band I knew called Doc Carr, he got me in working with a guy called Tommy Hayden. And I met this guy called Johnny Logan. And I started to manage Johnny Logan.
Didn't you meet Johnny Logan on a bus?
Yes, I did. I did. Going to Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. On the bus, going to the gig. And we started chatting. And he found out I love music and he loved music. And he said, I'd love you to manage me. And I said, well, I will, you know. Not knowing he had another manager at the time and a contract. So I was managing him, getting him small gigs, giving him support and I was giving him belief in himself. And then we got this song called What's Another Year. I didn't think it was a great demo. We put it in for the National Song Contest in Ireland and he won. And we went to The Hague in 1980 and he won the Eurovision. That's the real story.
That's massive, right? So we've got to understand that, you know, the Eurovision is still huge to this day. But at that time, it probably meant more, and in Ireland meant even more.
Winning for Ireland was amazing, and especially beating the Brits. You know, every year it's like, do we do better than Brits? There's always that rivalry, you know. By the way, Britain did brilliant this year. But Ireland, yeah, we won in 1980. Then he won again in 1987, and I was with them then as well. And he was great fun to work with. But I got to go all around Europe with him because he did all the big TV shows in Germany and France, and all over Scandinavia. And I discovered there's a whole life out there. He got Top of the Pops, he got number one. So that opened up a lot of doors for me and gave me loads of ideas.
Tell me about the phone call that you got to say that you'd got the National Song Contest. Because that is arguably the call that would have changed everything in terms of you going to the next level as a manager.
Well, I got the call, but I wasn't excited about it because I didn't think that the song was going to win. But on the night when it won, it was like, oh my God, this is going to open so many doors. So it wasn't a phone call. I was in studio and he won. And then we went to The Hague and we won Eurovision. We didn't think we were going to win, you know.
What was it like traveling around with a pop star at that point? Because you really hadn't left Ireland much, had you?
I hadn't left Ireland. I'd never been to the airport that much. And I was going to France and Germany and Scandinavia and Denmark, and we went to Turkey an awful lot. For some reason, he did really well in Turkey, and he was great fun to work with. And I had a brilliant time, and I learned an awful lot from working with Johnny Logan.
That gave you a position in the music industry.
It did.
To discover and establish new acts. Yeah, exactly.
I had a hit. It was 1980. There was none after that, but then he went back in 1987 and he won again with Hold Me Now. And we went to, where did we go? Brussels, and we won again. you know. And then I had another winner with Linda Martin in 1992, and I've had Jedward in Eurovision and loads of people. And so Eurovision has been good to me, and I've always enjoyed it. It's fun, it's kitsch, it's camp, but it's fun.
Let's move to a call that changed your fortunes, because I was reading about a call that you took from May Phelan, Shane's mum, who was a friend of your own mum's.
And that's right.
And when I think back to that phone call, that actually went on to absolutely change your fortunes. I mean, you're already a very successful manager at that point. You're
I was managing Boyzone. I was really busy in the office. I was getting loads of calls from loads of people. But this woman, she called me up and she said, she caught me and she sold me this band. She told me all about her son, Shane. And for some reason, I believed her. You know, and I said, well, listen, I have a band at the moment. I'd like to meet them. And Ronan Keating had a big party in Dublin at that time. So I invited the band, they were called IOU, to this party. And I met Shane and Mark and Kean there. There were others in the band, but I had to get rid of them. And
You didn't feel like they fitted, did you?
They didn't fit. And I got them. I'll tell you what I did. They were massive Backstreet Boys fans. So Peter Aiken, a local promoter here, he called me and he said, I need a support for the Backstreet Boys. Have you got anybody? I said, I have. I know a young band. So I rang the boys. They could not believe it. That was a phone call that changed their lives. I called them in Sligo. I said, guys, you're on with the Backstreet Boys. And they were roaring and screaming. It was like they were so excited because they were like their biggest fan. So I got them on with them. I had a look at them. I knew they weren't right, but I knew there was one or two great singers there. That was Mark and Shane.
So really, May phoning you, having spoken to Maureen.
She got me and I believed her. And she told me she was from Kelchimar, where I'm from. And she said, well, my son is like Michael Jackson. He dances like Michael Jackson. He's brilliant. But I actually believed her. You know?
He doesn't dance like Michael Jackson, Shane.
No, but to her, he did. And he is a great dancer. And he's a great guy. He's never out of tune. I shouldn't have taken that call. It shouldn't have worked. But, you know, it did. And sometimes you take a chance in life. I took a chance on that.
What about one of the most difficult calls you've ever had to make or receive?
Oh, telling people that they're not in the band or when I have to get rid of people. That's not a nice thing. Or telling people that they just failed the audition because, you know, they're waiting by the phone. And I understand what it means to them. And sometimes you have to let people down. You have to let them down really easy. I hate doing that. I had to do that recently with somebody. And I didn't like, and I didn't sleep the night before. Honestly, it got to me because they're waiting for your call and it's either a yes or a no. And this was a no. And it wasn't easy.
What about when you had to phone Colin Farrell and say no because you thought he was a crap singer?
Yeah. And Colin said to me, oh man, it's fine. I'm going to be an actor. And I said, acting. I said, Colin, you're wasting your time. I said, it's too hard. And we still laugh about that today. Colin is a brilliant guy. He's everything I like about Ireland. He's funny. He's brilliant. He's good at his job. But he doesn't take it serious.
What did he audition for? Was it Westlife?
Boyzone. And he had a bandana. And I met him in the pod. And he had the whole look going on. And all the girls liked him. And he sang a song for me. But he wasn't great. He was okay. But I went with Ronan and Stephen in the end.
When I think about difficult calls that we've had between ourselves, two moments stick out to me. And the first, I mean, hands down, the most difficult was talking about the death of Stephen Gately.
Oh, he was such a good kid. Wasn't he? He really was. I know everybody says that about people when they die.
Stephen
was so different and so nice. And you know what he was, Kate? He was grateful. He was incredibly grateful that he got a chance in life. And he was nice to everybody.
Yeah.
He could have had a great career in the West End. And, he should still be around. I'd still be working with him. He was absolutely great kid. I loved him.
I think his passing knocked the stuffing out of, I mean, all of you, didn't it? But you were hugely and quite rightly affected. I remember that very well.
Yeah. Yeah, because I really liked him and it shouldn't have happened. And it was the last thing in the world you expected. I'll always remember. I got the bad news after X Factor on a Saturday night. I'll always remember. I was in the car going through Hammersmith. Mm-hmm. I'll always remember. There's too many people gone away. Yeah,
that was hard. I remember that weekend.
It was like surreal. Yeah. I just didn't believe it. And then I was in shock. And I said, Andrew Lenars, the producer of the X Factor, he said, you don't have to do the show tomorrow. And I said, no, I'll do it. I was in shock. I didn't realise what had happened. You know,
I mean, looking back, I don't think you should have done the show that night, because you really were.
I didn't realise. I was in shock. All the good ones are gone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I know you were like a massive George Michael fan, weren't you?
Yeah.
You were like his biggest fan, and you knew him and you loved him. And
I loved him.
I know you did.
I still have moments. I have days where I could sit and listen to him all day, and then other days where if he comes on the radio, I have to switch over because it's just too sad.
I always remember you as being like one of his biggest. Just
loved him.
You loved him, and you loved everything about his music, and you knew him as well.
Do you know what? He was that amazing combination of talent, heart, soul, and sass.
Yeah.
He had all of it.
Very few people have all of it, you know. Yeah. And he would still have been making amazing music, Kate. Because he always made great music.
Never didn't make great music. You think what he was writing as a 15-year-old boy, like, you know, Careless Whisper. Hello.
Yeah, still a classic. That was the song I used in the first auditions when I was auditioning for Boyzone. I picked a hard song, you know, to see
if
anybody could do it. And there was only a few that were able to sing it, you know.
And finally, if you could make a phone call to somebody who's no longer here, who would you call and what would you say?
Oh, who would I call? I think I'd call Stephen Gately.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I've got a great song for him.
Not another cover, Louis.
I would pick, but it would be a number one. I said, come on back, we've got a great song. Or I'd get it with Mariah Carey or somebody, or Celine, or something like that. I think that would be a really fun call to make.
Didn't you get them together with Mariah Carey? Or was that Westlife?
That was Westlife, yeah. They did Against All Odds.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was a number one record. And then they did a song with Diana Ross.
That's right.
That was a number two, When You Tell Me That You Love Me. And they did a song with Lionel Richie. You know, they sang songs with some brilliant people.
How did you get those artists to work with Westlife?
They wanted to hit record, and Westlife were selling. And everything that Westlife did was number one at the time. They had like 16 number one. So Mariah knew, and she had this song, you know, and she knew if she put on the vocals with Mark, she loved Mark's vocal. And they did it in Capri. And it was a great song.
So who would have made those calls? You or Simon to the Mariahs and the Whitneys? And
I got the Mariah one, believe it or not.
How did you get that?
I got it through this lady who I know you know, Connie Filippello.
Yeah.
And that was a very funny phone call. Because Connie is a very funny lady. And
we can't tell that story, Louis. No, we can't tell that story.
That was through Connie Filippello.
You've got to take that one to the grave.
No, we won't. We'll do it again. And but listen, it was great fun. You know what? We had fun in the business then. I need more fun. If you're laughing is good.
That takes me very nicely to my next question.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
I wanted to talk to you about the time that we first came to know each other. It was the 90s, it trickled into the noughties. You were kind of front and center of everything that was going on in the charts. You were you know, the proverbial pig in shit, in as much as you were so happy to be in amongst all of it.
Yeah, and I had too much. I had too many acts and too many things.
You were just having too much fun. And I wonder, when you look back at that time, we obviously live in very different times now. Everything's changed. You know, people don't buy CDs anymore. We stream. Technology's changed everything.
I do. I still go to Tower Records and buy CDs and vinyl. Yeah. I can show you all the CDs around my house. I'll show you when we're finished.
But you know what I mean? Like the way we work, even the way we A&R now, it's not about going to find bands who are doing the live circuit. It's about data, followers. Everything's changed.
TikTok.
So I wonder, TikTok, you know, TikTok is Radio One now, right? So I wonder if you could look back and sort of think about the bits of the 90s and noughties that you miss, that you think, I wish we still worked like that now. What are they, and why was it such an important way of working for you?
I think I miss the way A&R guys work. I mean, there's no Simon Cowell or Colin Bauer. We need new people like that. They don't exist. And if you ring a record company, you know, all you get is voicemail. You cannot get a living person in there, you know? Mm-hmm. I miss all that. And finding a song and bringing it in and talking to, like, Lucian Grange. I used to talk to Lucian Grange. Now he's running the world. I used to be able to run up to his office in Universe and have a great fun with him. He was an amazing character, you know? Yeah. And I would play songs and we'd always have fun. And he'd dance around the office. He'd dance and playing guitar. This is Lucian, who's now running Universal Worldwide.
He's probably the most powerful man in music.
But I love Lucian. I'm in touch with him a little bit. You know, I text him now and again just to say hello, because he loves talking about the old Polydor days and stuff. But
You used to be able to get Lucian, like, on you'd just be able to call and he'd pick up. The same with somebody like Rob Stringer. I mean, we live in an age now where you have to schedule a call. And do you miss the spontaneity and the connectivity that we used to have, despite having very few connections, you know, in terms of internet back then?
I absolutely love it. And you mentioned Rob Stringer and you mentioned Lucian. They're still two of the biggest people in music, you know, but I just wish it could go back to the old way where you call them up and say, I've got this, I've got that, have a look, you know.
Yeah.
I have a great Rob Stringer story for you. Do you want to hear it?
Go on. Yeah.
He's going to hate this. So I was trying to sell, this is a true story.
Let's just set this out, right? Rob Stringer is the CEO of
Sony.
And Lucian Grange is the CEO of Universal.
And they're rivals, but they are it really
in the music industry in terms of the majors, right? So Rob Stringer started out here in the UK. People might remember his wife, Julia Carling. He's now based in New York and is king of everything at Sony.
Yeah. So I'm trying to sell Westlife and I'm doing kind of showcases in the pod in Dublin, putting them on, getting the guy into the record company. I nearly all the labels in. So I called Rob Stringer and I said, Rob, you missed out on Boyzone. Don't miss out on this. And I said, Simon Cowell wants them, but I want you to have a listen to them. He said, okay, and fly over. And he flew over a few days later and he did the gig in the pod, right? And
Irish nightclub, right? Which is where you used to showcase your bands.
It was the best nightclub. And so Rob comes in, he sees the boys, they do the five songs, we meet and greet, do the whole thing, da-da-da-da-da. So then the driver takes him to the airport, right? The driver takes him to the airport. I know the driver. So I say, what did he think? What did he say? He said, oh, they're just another boy band. He called the guy and he said, no, I came to Dumbledore, they're not with, just another boy. So every time I see Rob Stringer, I say, just another boy band, they sold 50 million records. That's the true story. And that's what Dublin is like. And be careful of drivers. Don't say anything in front of them because they always tell us back. True story.
Another true story around the formation of Westlife was the fact that, yes, you did have Simon Cowell very interested. And I remember you calling me going, he's in. But he took umbrage to one of the boys. I think it was Kian, wasn't it? And he said, he's got to go.
No, Shane.
Shane, right?
He came to Dublin. I had six guys originally. And three. So he told me, he said, darling, they're okay. You need to change four of them. Change four of them and I'll come back and look at them. I changed three of them. I couldn't change four of them because they were all like friends and stuff like that. So I got rid of the three that I thought didn't have it. And I said, Shane, he didn't like you. So I said, do you know what we're going to do? We're going to change your look. So we did. We dyed his hair blonde. He was blonde. Seriously, I had auditions. I found Nicky and remember Brian McFadden? He was in West Ham. I found Brian McFadden. And so Simon came back in. There were only 3 minutes into the set. He said, I'm signing them. This is amazing. I love them. Blah, blah, blah. We signed them. We had hits. And a few weeks later, he said to me, where did you find the little blonde guy? He's really great. I said, Simon, that's Shane who you said no to. You know, he says, no. I said, it's Shane. We dyed his hair blonde. You didn't know. You were wrong. So we laughed. He wasn't always right, but he was brilliant to work with. You know, he had a brilliant, he made everything happen for Westlife.
It wasn't what you had with him and Westlife was his full attention, which is something he wouldn't be able to give anybody now. And when Simon puts his mind to something, he went out and, you know, Flying Without Wings was, I mean, the moment you played that to me, it was like, you are on every radio. It didn't just do Radio Steve 1, Matt, it did everything. It went everywhere. That was a global hit. And that changed
That was originally for Stephen Gately, you know.
I know.
Yeah. But when Simon heard it, he says, I want, and there was no stopping him. And he got the producer right away, Steve Mack, who's now writing.
Stephen that? Because you're managing both acts. Stephen, I'm taking this amazing song from you as a solo artist.
I told him, and he was okay about it.
That was
the good thing. I know him, but he was really okay about it.
When you were thinking of the other facets of life in the 90s music industry that you really wish were still a part of your everyday working life, what are they?
Well, I miss record shops. I miss HMV and Tower and all that, even though we have a Tower in Dublin and I do go there. I miss all that. I miss Smash Hits, Kate.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I miss Top of the Pops.
Oh, so do I.
I miss, you know, the Saturday morning shows. I miss the midweek charts on a Tuesday. You know, I miss Smash Hits, the pole party. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Michelle Hockley. And remember, it was a great time. We had great fun.
It was a time of great decadence as well. I mean, like, there's money swashing around. So make stuff happen from, you know, the really fantastic to the utterly ridiculous.
Totally. And I mean, the charts, there was all kinds of music in the charts. Mm-hmm. You could have Oasis or Boyzone or Samantha Mumba, Girls, whatever it's going to be. Everything, you know. And it was a different time. Radio was different as well.
Yeah,
but I, you know, I'm prepared to move with the times. I do like a lot of new music. I still buy music. I listen to the charts. You know, I know what's going on. I know all the tours and everything. I'm an addict. I still read Billboard and Music Week and all that stuff. You know,
do you? I say, do you? I know you do because you live and breathe this business. I think there's still a part of you that is a music loving teenager from a small sleepy town in Ireland that can't believe his luck.
Totally, and music was my escape when I was young. You know, I wasn't playing football. I wasn't into studying. I didn't want a normal life or a normal job. And music was my escape, Kate. And I used to, you know, Top of the Pops on a Thursday, 7:30.
When you think about the people whose paths you've crossed in the time that's passed since then, you know, we talked a minute ago about working with Mariah and Diana Ross and Whitney. What are those moments where you stand there and you are that pop music loving teenager that can't quite believe he's in the room with people?
I'm still a fan. I mean, Bowie and Elton are still two of my all time heroes, you know, and I've met both of them and I love Elton, you know. I have a signed picture from Bowie over there, you know. It's like I'm still a fan and they're all people and they all love music. And I love the fact that a lot of them have longevity. They go on forever. Elton is like probably the greatest example of that, you know. He's still making music. He's still loving music. He's still touring. He's selling out everywhere. You know, there won't be anybody else like Elton John.
And then you had this kind of transition between working as a manager of big multi-million selling acts to work alongside them. So, you know, obviously working alongside people like Sharon and then Britney Spears when you stood in on X Factor US.
Oh, yeah.
Nicole Scherzinger, Gary
Love Marlowe. Love Nicole. I'm still in touch with Sharon Osbourne and Nicole. You know, they text me a lot and we text each other. We don't call every day, but we're in touch. We know what's going on. Yeah. And they were great people. Simon was great too. In his own odd way, he was great, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who else did I like?
You love Gary Marlowe.
Gary is just a gem. He's a gem. And, you know, he's living proof that if you work hard and write good songs, you can do it. And he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Sharon was okay, you know. Who else? Rita Ora Laura was okay. Plus, Danny Minogue, yeah, okay. You know, they were okay.
What about Britney?
Britney didn't say much. She didn't say much. When I was only with her for 2 days, she actually had earplugs in her ears, you know?
Oh, I don't understand. Yeah. How can you listen to auditions when you've got earplugs in?
Because she's Britney, I don't care. But she was there. She was nice, you know? I talked to her about Colin Farrell because I knew they had met a few times. And you know, that kind of broke the ice with her. And she was really nice. But I think, you know, they used to take her out after maybe every 20 minutes and give her something. You know, maybe coffee or something. I don't know what it was. But she used to have, and then she'd come back, she'd be all perky for a while. But listen, I love her. She's a survivor. She's going to be okay.
When you know now what we know, and you look back at how she was clearly behaving at that time, you start to join the dots, don't you? And you think, gosh, you know, you were a bystander there, not knowing what was going on. But my God, I wish somebody had stepped in and helped that woman.
She's fine. She's going to tour again. I'd like her to make another record, you know?
I remember when we were you getting really giddy because we had Barry Manilow in.
He looks so weird. I mean, come
That's
on.
What you said.
He looks so weird.
You were in a right tiz about it. You couldn't understand what happened to him.
Well, he looked weird. I love Cher. I remember when Cher was there. Cher. I love Cher. Cher looked amazing. You know, she's older than both of us together, you know? She's amazing. I went to see her in Miami and she was brilliant. And I would go and see Celine. I saw her in Miami as well. And she was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, actually,
I like divas.
You do like a diva, don't you? Of course, you do like a diva.
Nothing wrong with it. And I like country. You know, Kate, I like country music too. It's not very cool to say that, but I love country music. And it's the biggest music in America, you know? A great song is a great song, you know? And the people like it, you get on the radio. Radio is hard to get now for pop acts, you know, because everybody's playing formats and stuff, and there's all this dance stuff, and it's like by anonymous people.
But do you need radio to break a track now? I don't know that you do. I think TikTok has the ability to do, you know, far greater numbers for you.
Yeah, TikTok. But it's nice to get radio as well.
Of course. And TV.
You know, and obviously, but I think everything helps.
Yeah, there's no TV shows for them to go and perform on now. There's no Top of the Pops. There's no Saturday morning kids shows. All that kind of familiar route that we all used to travel to break bands, that just doesn't exist in the same way anymore.
That was a 90s thing. For the indie band, you have Jules Holland and stuff, and you have the talent shows, like Britain's Got Talent. There's always somebody on that.
You've got to be an established act to get on there. Where do you go if you're starting out? You know, it's hard.
Yeah, or know somebody. If you know somebody, you might get them on.
Exactly. That's why you need Louis Walsh as your manager. Okay, ready for your last question? It's been reported that you have made at least 12 unknown artists into millionaires. So you've changed people's fortunes. And I wondered if you could talk to me about the people that came into your world and ultimately changed your own fortunes.
Honestly, I mean, where Boyzone happened, you know, I mean, it shouldn't have happened, but it happened because we were blindly innocent and we made some good songs, you know. Were they great singers? No. But they had personality and they looked and they charmed everybody in the UK.
You know what? They were so nice as well, Louis. I've got to say that about both Boyzone and Westlife. You know, the goodwill exists today towards them, and people still remember that they always turned up on time. They shook everyone's hand. They remembered everyone's name. They told a few funny jokes. You know, they worked the room.
They were nice.
But you were the reason they did that. You absolutely coached them in that.
Well, they were grateful. They were grateful to be on the show. And pop acts have to remember, you know, these producers can pick anybody they want, you know, to be on the TV. So why should they pick you? So if you're nice and you show up and you're professional, you have a good chance of getting back, you know. And you meet the same people on the way down you meet on the way up, you know. And we should never remember, we should never forget that.
I mean, we've got to say Johnny Logan's definitely one of your change makers, right, in terms of the fortune that he
brought to. Simon Cowell put me on TV. I didn't want to be on TV, Kate. It was never in my dreams to be on TV.
But you did Pop Stars Arrivals before that.
Yeah, I did with Pete Waterman and Jerry Halliwell, who's now gone all posh. Have you seen her? She's all very posh. Hello? You're from Watford? Jerry? Yeah, Pop Stars Arrivals, though. That was fun. Did you host that?
No, Davina hosted that. I did Pop Idol and then X Factor.
Okay.
Yeah, so who would have put you on screen for Pop Stars Arrivals? Would that have been Nigel Lithgow?
No. It was, what's the really camp producer? Really camp. Oh, so funny.
You'll have to be so much more specific than that. There's a lot to choose from.
He was so funny. He was the funniest guy. Anyway, he met me in London in a hotel and he said, do you want to be on TV? I said, no, I didn't want to be on TV. I was very happy just managing the bands and just all that stuff. I was making good money as a manager. And then he offered me a load of money and I just said, yes. It was like that. Yeah, I'll do it. It was to do something that I liked doing anyway, you know. But then when I did that show, Pop Stars Arrivals, I thought I was going to get the boy band, you know. Yeah. I was convinced. And it was Pete Waterman, me and Jerry. And they gave me the girls, you know. Like, oh, geez, I don't want them, you know.
Why didn't you want a girl band? I've never understood your reluctance to manage female artists.
Oh, girls don't like each other in bands. It's very, very simple. Look at the Sugar Babes, how many lineups that they had, and they were brilliant. Three of them, you know. Girls don't like each other. They all want to be the lead girl. They all want to go out with the footballer. They all want to be the skinniest, you know. So I had these five girls, and Colin Barlow found this great song, Sound of the Underground. So
it got number one.
It was a brilliant song. Colin found it, and it was Polly, or not me. There was a guy called Peter Lorraine involved as well. He was great.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
He's brilliant. And Pete thought he was going to win with his band, One Loud Voice, was it? One True Voice. He hasn't really talked to me ever since. Took it really badly.
I saw Pete recently. He's on good form, you know. He's on good form. I love Pete.
He's not a good loser. You know, he's not a good loser. He's fun. I like him. And PWL were brilliant. Ah. You should get them on. They did amazing stuff for English pop music.
Yeah, they did.
Why don't they get back together?
I don't know that they get on.
Who cares? Look at ABBA.
Yeah, look at ABBA. I mean,
look at them. And they're looking well.
Simon Cowell is probably somebody that brought a lot of fortune into your world because of the way... Lovely. You worked together on Westlife. They are still your biggest selling band. And they were the act that probably got him taken more seriously in the A&R world than he had been previously.
Yeah, and he worked every single day. We were on the phone every single day. And he was happy. If he wasn't happy with the video, he'd just redo it. He wasn't happy with the mix on the song, he would redo it. He's a producer's nightmare, but he knows what he wants. And then he'll get the record played and he'll make sure they get all the TVs and he's on the phone to everybody. He's a brilliant hustler, you know. And that's why then he did so many other acts after that. You know, there'll be no One Direction or Little Mix, only for Simon. And he did El Divo and Five and Susan Boyle and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the track record is extraordinary.
We need him to come back.
But you two worked together quite well. And, you know, he always assumed, I would say, the voice of control. But you were always very mischievous in terms of, like, for example, Shane getting his hair dyed, right? Simon wanted him out of the band. You were like, no way he's staying in. So you found a workaround to manipulate the outcome you wanted. And I think that's probably very true of a lot of your exchanges as colleagues and friends.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't do things in a bad way. I would be mischievous. Yeah, yeah, that's me. I can't help myself, and I can't change. You know, but working with Simon was brilliant. It really was, and it was fun. He's a very fun person. Not just the way he dresses, or the hair. He's fun.
I remember there was it must have been early seasons of X Factor, but you know when we'd have like a bit of downtime in the judges' room in between filming sessions. You'd left your phone on the table.
Oh.
And do you remember this? And Simon...
He got my phone and he sent a text to somebody.
It was to the head of one of the record labels and it said...
It was to Nick Raphael.
Yeah.
Who was an A&R guy in Sony. And he sent this text to him. Darling, I'd love to call around to see you and we'll watch Gladiator during the week. And it's like... I didn't know who he sent it to.
He'd sent him a text saying, hey, I'm over in London filming. It'd be great to catch up. I've got my Blockbuster membership with me. Do you fancy watching Gladiator?
No, he's very funny. And it was funny, but I mean, it was just, and I shouldn't have left my phone down in front of him. But anyway, I'm sure he did lots of other things as well. But you know what? I'd do it all again. It was great.
So we've got Johnny Logan, we've got Simon, we've got the guy whose name you can't remember that put you on telly. Who else have been the people that have brought great fortune to your life and world?
Westlife, Boyzone, Simon, that's it, you know. And I enjoy my life. I enjoy life.
I'm
happy. Oh, yeah. Hey, will you ever forget? You ever forget me hassling you about something? The new act of the year of Smash Hits.
Oh, God, yeah. You two bloody brothers. I gave in, though. I gave in to you. They were nice lads, but, oh, Louis. Yeah, you were relentless.
That was hard work.
It was like, look who's stalking. You used to fax me, phone me, page me.
Every day. Promise you the world. Promise you every... By the way, thanks very much.
What were they called, your brothers?
The Carter twins.
The Carter twins. Lovely lads.
Yeah,
they used to say to me, they're like two young Elvises. Yes, I just, for God's sake, get him off the phone. I've got Simon Cowell holding with Robson and Jerome.
Oh, God.
That was what was so funny about you. God, the way things have moved on and played out. You know, the power shift has definitely shifted not in my favour. But there was a time when Simon had to be nice to me. Otherwise, his acts didn't get into the biggest music magazine in the country.
Yeah, and the biggest TV show on that Sunday afternoon. That was the big one in Wembley. Oh, God.
Yeah, the Smash Hits poll winners. And, you know, when I took that on as the editor, I became very unpopular because I said, I think we need a new host. And I think it was Philip Schofield who'd been hosting up until then. And I put Anton Deck in, and it was their first live TV show.
Really? Mm. Wow. And do they ever thank you?
Yeah, always. They're amazing.
Oh, good. That's okay.
Yeah,
that's they good. Are.
And it was the poll winners that year. We had Prince lined up. He was known then as a symbol, right? And the morning of the show, he just didn't show. He didn't show. And
the Carter twins.
I was looking at my running order, and I think we had to try and get. I think we ended up giving Robbie Williams two songs, but he'd only had one hit.
Oh well, you know what? You always believed in Robbie.
So I'd been over to see you in Dublin with Denise Van Outen 1 year. And Rob was over there, and he was not in his best shape at that time. You know, his lifestyle was not where it is now. And it was a bit of a mess. And his mum, Jan, would always be phoning me going, have you seen our Robert? Is he all right? And I'm like, I'm in Dublin, but I haven't seen him. And I'll try his hotel room. And, you know, they were worried about him, and absolutely with good reason. So anyway, I eventually track him down, and he was with some guy or other. Anyway, we were walking to a petrol station late one night to get cigarettes, and he started singing me a song that he'd just written, and that was Angels.
I know, because he co-wrote it with a guy in Dublin. You know,
that's right.
It's living proof. No, he had the X Factor.
So I knew he was good. I knew he was good.
He needed but the also, right song. Yeah, but a lot of people, Kate, a lot of people would have given up on him, but no, he knows exactly. He has a great instinct, Robbie.
Yeah.
He's a great about life and about everything. I know he has.
I think, you know, as you can have all the talent in the world, but I think for him, he needed to end up in the right hands by way of management. And it took a while, but ultimately he found his way to David and Tim, David Entenhoven, and Tim, who looked after his career. And they got him clean, and they got him to believe in himself again. And
totally, yeah. And he does. And he's great. He's an entertainer, and he's funny, and you never know what he's going to say or do. You know, that's what I like about him, you know?
Yeah.
And his wife is lovely.
Yeah, I like
he's
her.
He's great fun.
She's really feisty. Great fun. Yeah, she like really
her.
Is.
He's lucky he's got her.
Anyone else that you think has been seminal in terms of who you are and where you are?
My mother and father. They're important in my life, you know?
Frank and Maureen, yay!
Absolutely. I think I like living in Dublin more. I think living here, it keeps you grounded. You know, you can't get too big for your boots in Dublin. People tell you. And like Bono walks around here and nobody really cares. And Van Morrison and Sinead O'Connor and all these great people. You see them all in town, you know, and nobody cares. There's no paparazzi chasing around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're a happy man, aren't you?
Yeah. Most of the time.
As long as you've got your record collection and the ability to buy a new piece of art, I think that's you good.
Yeah, a bit of music, yeah.
Yeah. Can we get together and let's drag Sharon out?
We are always saying we're going to do that, and we should do. You know it'll be an all-day or an all-nighter.
I'm up for that. I can clear the diary.
Absolutely, good.
Let's get the band back together, Louis.
The old band, oh yeah.
Triple threat. Our combined ages are quite frightening now, aren't they? It's like, Jesus, we're old. But we're still good fun.
No, we have experience. We can't buy experience.
There you go, Louis Walsh. And don't forget, we've also got episodes with Fern Britton that you can dive into, his fellow housemate. And I will, of course, be back on Friday with a brand new episode with a brand new guest. Remember that you can always find us on Instagram. So go follow us at whitewine_questiontime. And also, please hit the follow button on Spotify. Thank you, as always, for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.